national broadcast on Pacifica Radio. I'm co-hosting with Dennis Bernstein, and my name is Davey D, and we've been talking about some of the attacks on civil liberties in the wake of the impending war on Iraq, and what we need to be aware of and what we could do to possibly stop it. And one of the things that I think we need to keep in mind is with what Daniel was saying is that he seemed to be implying that is that the administration depends upon a certain amount of ignorance of the audience, of the general public, to get some of these things through. And one of the best ways that we can have that, exploit that ignorance, is through media control. Now, a couple of years ago, I remember hearing reports where they said the American public, most of them got their information there from TV talk shows, meaning like Late Night at Jay Leno and David Letterman is where they got their news from. And when you start to break that down, you find that in different communities, they depend upon maybe one or two sources to get information. In the African-American community, it's radio. And if it doesn't happen on radio, if you don't hear it, it doesn't exist. And I go back to an old saying that Chuck D once said. He said, you could bomb New York, and brothers in New York would not know if it doesn't show up on the radio. And after 9/11, when those towers fell down, the number one station at the time, the only major urban station, didn't tell people that the towers got hit. And so I got a call in California, 3,000 miles away, from somebody in New York who wanted me to play a record on my show that afternoon. And I'm like, dude, the towers fell down. And he's like, word? You're kidding. No, I didn't even know. And it's like, what are you doing? He goes, I'm listening to the radio. They never said anything. So literally, I mean, this is the type of thing that, as funny as it is, I mean, for a lot of people, if it doesn't show up at those one or two sources, it doesn't exist. And so somebody who's been addressing the array of problems that we are dealing with, in particular in the African-American community, with respect to radio and other media outlets, is Bob Law. He's a longtime community activist. He's also a radio talk show host. And he's been spearheading what we are now calling the Turn Off the Radio campaign. And he has a whole lot of heavyweight people rolling with him. So, Bob, thank you for staying on hold, and welcome to Pacifica Radio. How you doing, sir? Bob, are you there?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yeah, now we got you loud and clear. How are you doing this afternoon?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Well, you know, kind of explain to everybody that's listening what is the main thrust of the Turn Off the Radio campaign, and tie that into the lack of information that is not being disseminated to our communities via the radio and other media outlets.
Well, let me just tie into just what you have just laid out about a kind of posture on black radio in particular. What we are saying with the Turn Off the Radio campaign is that we need to make it clear to the community, as well as to those who own radio, that black radio in particular, or radio that is aimed at the black community, and not, most of it is not owned by black people. To some extent, there is some black ownership, and that has been greatly reduced, particularly since the Communications Act, which the members of the Black Congressional Caucus many of the members of the Black Congressional Caucus supported, even though they were told that it was going to be harmful to the community and to black ownership. But they had already, I imagine, taken the money from the lobbyists. They couldn't change their vote. But to tie it in with what you're saying, we are trying to make it clear that what is on the radio is so irresponsible. It is, the radio is failing the black community to such a degree that it would be better if we just turned the radio off. You know, the group Dead Press says that turning on the radio at this point is like putting on a blindfold. And you get such little credible information. You get no news. You get no investigative reporting. You get hardly anything of value. And then you get, and what you do get is anti-woman, anti-life. It's anti-black. It is a preponderance of destructive, damaging ideas and information. And so we are saying that we need to call a halt to that. And we need to wrestle the airwaves away from the people who currently dominate them, because the radio stations don't own the airwaves. Radio stations, up at least till now, really in a sense rent the airwaves, but they treat it as though they own it absolutely, make all of the decisions about what you hear and what you don't hear. And right now, radio is in the hands of conservatives, ultra-conservatives, be they black or white. The programming is in the hands of ultra-conservatives, be they black or white. And the black folk who are there in programming positions or in management positions are either cowardly or apolitical or both.
Yeah. Let me give people an example just to kind of spell this out. Here in San Francisco, the urban stations where you might have anywhere from 7 to 8 out of 10 African-Americans listening to one or two stations, not one of them made mention of the anti-war demonstrations that are going on tomorrow. So when you look out in the crowd and you go, damn, how come folks from the hood didn't show up? Then you have to go, well, who didn't allow this to go on the airwaves? And what you'll find with a lot of those urban stations, it's usually a 40 or 50-year-old white guy who has no connection with the community, looking at a bunch of statistics, and decides that this is not important. And in fact, since I did talk to one of the DJs, they told me that they weren't allowed to talk about it. So there you have it. I'm not sure if they did that in New York where they had the historic march today, if Hot 97 or Power 105 out there mention it, if the urban stations in Houston or even in D.C. at least made mention, much less even had a discussion as to why we should even be going out and having this type of dialogue. And that's real important. So in other words, if Pookie, who's the proverbial kid from the hood, doesn't know, you have to ask, what is his source of information? I can tell you TRL, which is one of the most watched shows, and 106 in Park, which is on BET, which is the most watched show for young people of all races under a certain age, did not have this conversation. They didn't ask any of the artists, et cetera, et cetera. And then lastly, to put it into context, since 9/11, there's been more than 30 rap songs, some of them from very popular artists, from Nas on down to Dead Prez to Public Enemy, who have put out anti-war songs, who have put out songs that question what has happened against 9/11. None of those guys got airplay, even the most popular artists. And so at the same time, artists like Dr. Dre, who said, well, let me give $1 million, or maybe let me do a song against Osama, they did get play and they did get a lot of, note. So this is real interesting. We need to be aware of who's green lighting. But before we let you go, Bob, tell us about the rally and some of the people that is on your crew and around this organizing effort that you're doing.
All right, let me just come back, though, to the point that you were just making. So I think it's important that people understand that what is happening or not happening is not an oversight. It's not just that they are not aware of it or didn't think of it or didn't think that it was appropriate. It is a very deliberate political decision to absolutely control the flow of information that goes into the street, that goes into the black community. So the people who are making these decisions are very cognizant of what they are doing. And when you talk about the music and the anti-war songs that are not being played, one of the things that we have learned is that young people who don't appear to be listening to anybody else are listening to the music makers. They're listening to the rappers, and it has always been like that. People who were not listening to their teachers in school back in the 1960s and 70s were listening to Curtis Mayfield and James Brown and Stevie Wonder. They listened to Marvin Gaye. The same thing is true now. They don't appear to be listening to anybody else, but they are listening to what's on the radio. There's a film documentary called Amandla, which is about the liberation struggle in South Africa. It's opening in New York right now. And one of the brothers from South Africa who's interviewed in the film says, it was the music that freed us. And this documentary is about the role that music played in that liberation struggle, because music is at the center of our experiences. And understanding how powerful the music is, the people who control the airwaves have decided to lock up the music. The music, see, when we say turn off the radio, and when we raise this issue, we're really raising this issue to free the music. It's like Oscar Brown Jr. told me once, we have to free the music so the music can free the people.
Right. Bob, not to cut you off, only because we're just getting ready to run out of time, because the producers are looking at me like, yo, we're running out of time.
All right.
Let me just let everybody know real quickly that on the Tuesday the 18th, at Abyssinian Baptist Church is where you're going to have the rally in New York City. And Abyssinian, of course, is headed by Reverend Calvin Butts. And some of the people that's been on board with you include everybody from Chuck D to Africa Bambaataa to Viola Plummer, the December 12th Movement, Ray Goodman and Brown, a whole host of people from all ages and all walks of life in the community. And so I would encourage people to go out. And if anybody wants to get the open letter, you wrote an excellent open letter to the black community, hit me up at Mr. Davey D. That's MRDAVEYD at AOL. I'll send you a copy. And Bob, I didn't mean to cut you off, but we're just back behind time. So thank you so much for taking the time out this afternoon.
Yeah, thank you.
And we're going from Bob to Bob. Am I on here? We're going from Bob to Bob to Bob here. We've got, in fact, Robert Knight standing by in New York City, who was covering the rally all day. Robert, are you there?
Yes, I am, and it took quite some time to get back to the WBAI studios from the environs of the United Nations.
What's the matter? You don't know the way?
There's quite a story behind that, and it has to do with the shutdown of public access, public transportation, and even the right of people to go to the rally. Today's rally, Dennis, I think you have to understand, attracted many people of goodwill. In fact, very huge figures are being reported here in New York, anywhere on the order of 500,000 to 700,000, according to the latest estimate I heard at the rally scene where I was doing some anchoring for Pacifica. But it also attracted a bad element in the form of the New York City Police Department and soldiers of the National Guard who are patrolling the city at this point in time because of a terror alert, as it's called, based on false information from an informant who apparently was trying to gain some advantage and then fail a lie detector test. I think what is important to stress, particularly with the event that you will be having in San Francisco tomorrow, is that the police have evolved new tactics for suppressing dissent and for having people manifest at a rally like this. Here in New York, in particular, the tactic of the use of fragmentizing, of granularizing the gathering of people so that they do not intercommunicate. They lock them off block by block so that it's many small groups and people do not have a holistic sense of the hugeness of their presence. The police use metal interlocking barricades straight solid through down the avenue with barely an opening every once in a while for people to cross the street, but then it doesn't matter because they don't let people cross the street anyway. People are then crowded into these pens, tightly packed more so than even a veal factory. And the way that this is done has caused conflict. There was pushing, there were arrests, there were injuries that occurred today. But nevertheless, we had estimates of the crowd running from the low 40s up into the 80s on 3rd Avenue. These are north-south blocks, very wide boulevards. And this is three blocks away from where the rally scene was. So cumulatively, we may have had as much as 8 to 10 miles of a boulevard of people. In the total amount of people who were there. Now, the exclusion of people from the rally has been assisted by federal strategists. Federal attorneys and amicus briefs, of course, were filed on behalf of the New York Police Department to prevent a march to the United Nations. But I think to the larger point, today's rally and protest was the second one in 2 days to happen at the United Nations. There was the popular rally with millions of people around the world taking part, and there was a rebellion within the Security Council to the misrepresentations that have been made, the petulance presented by Powell in his representations, his satellite photos, the issues of Iraqi access and nuclear efforts. All of these things were soundly refuted by the reports of the weapons inspectors, Hans Blix of the UN and Mohammed El-Baradei of the International Atomic Energy Agency. So what has happened is a significant manifestation. Many people were making much of the fact that Associated Press at the end of the day reported that, stunned by global protests, the Bush administration is thinking twice about the wording of their new resolution on Iraq. And I think that's useful for the people who have protested, but I think it's insignificant and meaningless until that point in time that the troops are recalled. There are an eighth of a million troops, fewer troops than gathered in New York today, but That is the real demarcation point. The rest will be just rhetoric and flourish. And I think that we will have to have more rallies, particularly in a month or so from now, as the squeeze continues. We have won those who have expressed themselves against the war in Iraq, a major victory today, but it's only a battle, and the war is not over until the war is over.
Well, Robert Knight, that's a very important report. I was thinking a lot about that second resolution and what kind of little games they're going to play to get any resolution through, and then they'll say, well, they passed that second resolution. It's time for war. We're going to watch that very closely. I'm glad that you managed to make it back so that you could speak with us. We got a ton of things backed up, but Robert Knight in New York does the night report for Flashpoints, heard daily on Pacifica Radio, KPFA, and in Houston on KPFT. Thanks for being with us. And now I believe we've got Barbara Lubin, who was in Sacramento today.
That's something going
on
up there.
Hi, Barbara. Where are you now?
Where am I now? I'm still in Sacramento.
Tell us about what happened today. What was going on there?
Well, they said it was one of the larger marches that they've had, peace rallies that they've had up here. There were thousands of people. And it's still going on. There was a counter rally of maybe 50 people holding American flags saying bomb Saddam and some other kinds of things like that. But there were all kinds of people in this SS rally, and it was very spirited. People were singing. People were giving great talks. And it's sort of coming to an end now, but it was very good.
Why was it important for you to be on the streets today, and why will you be on the streets again tomorrow?
Well, because I think that we have to stop this ongoing war, which has taken place for 12 years on the people of Iraq. You know, I keep hearing no war on the people of Iraq, but I'm reminded of the 12 years I've been going there and seeing this horrific war that has taken place. And I was there, too, because I know, if nobody else knows, I know the connection between Palestine and Iraq, and I recognize that in order to have peace in the Middle East, there has to be a just resolution to the Palestinian problem. And I've been on the streets for many, many, many years and will continue to be there.
Barbara Lubin, Middle East Children's Alliance, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Dennis.
We're going to, Davey, we've got some, we're going to try and get as many reports as we can in from the different locations around the state, around the country. We've got, I believe it's Mandy Brown at Santa Cruz standing by. Are you there, Mandy?
Hello, Dennis.
Hi, what happened in Santa Cruz today?
Well, about estimates of 5,000 to 7,000 people gathered at the Santa Cruz County building. And then there was a short rally here, and then we marched. We didn't have a permit to march, but we marched down the sidewalk, and then people took over the street because there were far, far too many people to collect in the sidewalk. So the 7,000 or 5,000 marched down to the Mission Plaza where we continued the rally, and it was really a beautiful crowd.
Mandy, as you guys were walking, were people joining the march who hadn't really come out? Were you?
Absolutely. Oh, lots and lots of people who I spoke to said that they haven't been to any of these marches yet. But as this proposed war looms closer and closer, people are getting more and more scared and trying harder and harder to do something to stop it.
Well, that's great. So we had 5,000 to 7,000 people in Santa Cruz, and that's good. We want to thank you for calling in. We're going to go to some of the other cities. This is encouraging, all the people, 5,000 here, 10,000
right.
there.
It's local, it's national, it's international.
So let's go to Caroline Casey out in Santa Monica. How you doing?
I'm doing fabulous. Hey, Dennis.
And it's David D. as well. So,
Oh, good, David D. That's great. No, Santa Monica was adorable. They passed their peace resolution. The mayor was out there. They passed last Tuesday. It was maybe 2,000 to 3,000 people, but very much another world is percolating, very much the sense that this is first we stop the war and then we keep going. This is an invitation to the whole cultural renewal. And, you know, we say yesterday and today were bad days for the extremely temporary U.S. regime, and that's a good day for creation and life on this planet.
Right.
Very much a sense of magic and prayer and young people. You know, there were 5- and 6-year-olds coming out to sing and do concerts. It was...
Any movie stars out there in Santa Monica?
Apparently, and this is a good sign, too, no one seemed to care. There were two cops on horses who were very jolly. They were going by going, hey, hey, how you doing? How the kids? Saw you at the softball game. Saw you at the rave. I whited out the, you know, I airbrushed out the, you know, picture of people smoking up. How you doing? You know, anyway, very jolly. Again, peace is not the, you know, the goal. Peace is the way. Very much embodied. Tom Hayden was out. He said, largest and most mysterious global movement he's seen in 50 years of activism. He reminded us that the French minister quoted, and the French minister said, another world is possible. And, of course, the corporate mainstream, you know, American press was like, what does he mean by that? But everybody else knew. So the French minister said, another world is possible. We go, yay, Germany. Ron Kovic was here again. But it wasn't a celebrity thing at all. It was many four-leggeds were on the beach. You know, again, many babies, highly diverse mix of everybody. And amazing encounters. I mean, people met each other who hadn't seen each other in years.
This sounds really good. Carolyn, don't mean to cut you off. We just want to try and squeeze in some of the other people that's been reporting. So it's good to see that it was that you guys were holding it down in Santa Monica. So peace to you, and thanks for calling in, okay?
Thank you.
All right, peace.
We now, Davey, go to Columbia, Missouri, and we're joined by Frank, I believe it's Schultz, KOPN. Are you there, Frank?
I'm right here, yes, indeed.
And, Frank, what was going on in Columbia, Missouri?
Well, we this morning at 11 o'clock, every Saturday, actually, in Columbia, there's a peace vigil at the post office for an hour. And real hardcore peace activists come out every Saturday at 10 o'clock and stand in front of the post office with signs and placards. But today, we also had a march from the post office through downtown Columbia to the city-county building, to the courthouse. And it was very well attended. We had somewhere between 600 and 700 people in the march, and including a contingent of young anarchists who challenged the police a little bit by actually playing in the street, dancing and playing drums in the street. Most of the marchers stayed on the sidewalk, so it was a relatively peaceful demonstration.
Well, that's absolutely shocking that they would be playing in the streets and dancing, but I guess that's all right, huh? And before we let you go, Frank, you know, a lot of people think that community radio is Pacifica Radio, but I know that KOPN has been around a long time. Just say something about KOPN and what role it plays in that community there.
Well, KOPN actually is the eighth oldest community radio station in the nation. We were founded in 1973, I believe, if my memory serves me right, and at 10 watts, that's right, and have been managing to survive all these years. We're coming up, this year, starting in March or April, is our 30th anniversary, so we're gearing up for the 30th anniversary celebration. And we had the 90s were rough years here, as at many of the Pacifica stations. We had some professional managers who went to strip programming in AAA, and we lost a lot of our volunteer programmers. But we took the station back about 3 years ago, and
we can relate to that.
Yeah, we know a little something about that.
And that somehow happened all at once in lots of community stations.
It sure did.
All over this country. But we're back. We're strong. I want to thank you very much for giving us that report from Columbia, Missouri.
You're welcome.
Now, we have two young people in the studio here, Becky and Lizzie. They're in the audience. They have founded, I guess, a social justice club. You want to talk about that? Introduce yourself and tell us what's going on.
All right.
Thanks. Well, my name's Becky Hendricks.
I'm Lizzie Lusterman.
And we're from Marin County in California, and we go to Sir Francis Drake High School there. And recently, a junior at our school got the idea from another school to found a social justice club there. And it is a school club where students that are concerned about current issues in the world get together and they take action and they get educated about it. And we've taken part recently in a lot of different actions by that club, including a teach-in at our school, and we've gone to the rally with signs for social justice club. And it's really awesome, and a lot of young people at our school are involved in it.
And what's been the response? Overwhelming, good response?
Yeah, except for a bad article in our local newspaper.
Well, what did it say?
One of the kids at our school, who's kind of a hardcore Republican, didn't like what we were doing.
They basically accused us of being hypocrites, which I should first say that we're kind of lucky to come from an area that is primarily white and middle upper class, but the kids at our school are pretty open-minded, and the general consensus there is, you know, no war against Iraq. But and so a lot of people are like, yeah, we don't believe in war. We think this whole thing's stupid. We wish Bush was not our president. But then the people who are against that, in addition to their own opinions, say that some of us are being hypocrites by not walking our talk, you know, going off in our SUVs that we do have the privilege of owning, living in white America, and just complaining about the things going on in other parts of the world that we're just not, you know, doing anything about. We're just complaining.
Well, at least y'all started a club at a time when they say a lot of people your age aren't even interested in politics, so y'all get props for that. Well, and as far as the guy who wrote the article, just a suggestion, start your own online publication so you can always counter it, you know, so you always have your own voice print and you don't have to worry about somebody writing an article pro or con. You put your own voice out there. So,
well, definitely. Thank both of you very much. Davey D, we're going to have to wrap it up right there. We're out of time. I want to thank the studio audience.
Man.
Thank you very much. And it has
Props
been
to
wonderful.
Props to you, Dennis, for doing this, man.
Well, thank you, Davey. And it really, I am so delighted that you could come in and join me as a co-host on a very important day when people around the world, around this country, by the millions, stood up, had their voices heard, and let the leaders know that they don't want war, that there's an alternative. It's called peace. It's called negotiation. It's called understanding. It's called international sharing, learning. Diversity, getting strength through diversity. We thank Pacifica Radio for allowing us to do this. Again, Davey, if people want to get information about Hard Knock or the work that you do, how do they do that?
Why don't you just hit us up? Hit me up at my website, which is daveyd.com. That's daveyd.com. And if you want to get that open letter on Turn Off the Radio, just, again, go to the website, daveyd.com. And also, as I get ready to leave, Jesse Jackson said something to me a long time ago. He said, if we can be creative enough to figure out how to do all these technological things, whether it's building skyscrapers or coming up with new weapons, we can be just as creative to figure out how to socially engineer the world so that we can come up with a peaceful solution to any conflict. So we can do it, and I'm glad we did this today.
That sounds good to me, and I want to thank Stephanie Hendricks. She is the producer of this show. We had help from Leslie Kane, Eric Park, and of course Mary Bishop, the technical director of Flashpoints, was working double time today. We thank her. Jim Bennett gave us a great deal
Big
of support
Jim.
Help. Big Jim, we thank him so much, and lots of other people. And you stay tuned. By the way,
don't forget to pledge, everybody.
Don't forget to pledge.
Right.
$100 pledge gets you the 2-CD set of this teaching. So if you only heard a little bit of it, you can call the room, the volunteer room, 510-848-5732, 510-848-5732.
Let me jam up my godfather who's listening, because he's probably sitting on the couch in New York. Uncle Sonny, you know, just get to the phone and donate some money. I got my boy Warren out there and my other friend Guy in Houston. So I'm going to personally appeal to my friends and folks that if I don't see that they pledge, then, you know, I'm going to call them personally and give them hell.
All right.
You know, because we got to, you know, walk the walk and talk the talk.
That's
you know?
Right. That's it. I'm Dennis Bernstein. If you want to check out our program, Flashpoints, it's www.flashpoints.net. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you in the studio.
And again, the number to call here in Berkeley is 1-800-439-5732, 1-800-439-5732, or 848-5732 in the 510 area code. Next on KPFA, stay tuned for Art Sato's program, In Your Ear, coming up next from 4 to 6. But keep turning out in record numbers for KPFA and saying no to war wherever you can.
The world says no to war. On Sunday, February 16th, tens and hundreds of thousands will mobilize in San Francisco as part of a global effort to stop the war in Iraq. We assemble at the Embarcadero at 11 a.m. and march at 1 to the Civic Center for a 2 p.m. mass rally. Call Bay Area United Against War, 415-824-8730. This is Jeff Mackler urging you to say no to war, to defend civil liberties, oppose racist scapegoating, and make our priorities education, healthcare, jobs, and not war. Join us on February 6th.